thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The trial starts today for the man accused of killing seven people at the Highland Park 4th of July parade. What to know about the jury selection process. Chicago is leading the country in inflation. The president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago tells us why.
We've gotten very used to the fact that death is just staring us in the face, and I think the world has gotten used to it too.
And local Ukrainians share their thoughts about the ongoing war with Russia. And now to some of today's top stories. The U.S. Supreme Court has handed a defeat to abortion opponents today, refusing to hear a pair of cases about laws limiting anti-abortion demonstrations near clinics. One of the cases originated from an ordinance in downstate Carbondale, Illinois, which became a destination for people seeking abortions from nearby states. The law is intended to address disturbing behavior from protesters outside of clinics that provide abortions, but anti-abortion activists argued the measures violate their free speech rights. The Supreme Court justices did not explain their reasoning, as is typical, but two conservatives, Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas, disagreed. Chicago officials still have 2 years to spend $142 million in federal COVID funds intended to shore up the city's social safety net as Chicagoans recover from the now five-year-old pandemic. A WTTW News analysis shows that amount would have been $87 million higher, but the city council voted to use those funds to balance the city's 2025 budget and avert a property tax hike. This means programming for affordable housing, mental health, violence prevention, youth jobs, and help for unhoused Chicagoans will receive fewer of those federal dollars through the end of 2026. For more on this story, you can check out our website. And Grammy-winning soul singer Roberta Flack has died. The songstress, seen here performing on an episode of Soundstage at Park West back in 1981, was best known for her hit, Killing Me Softly. She became an overnight star in the early 70s. That's when Clint Eastwood used her song, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, in his film, Play Misty for Me. In 2022, Flack announced she had ALS, often known as Lou Gehrig's disease, and could no longer sing. A publicist says she died today surrounded by family. Roberta Flack was 88 years old. And we'll see more of that 1981 performance later in the program. Up next, a high-profile trial gets underway right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The trial is underway for Robert Cremo III, who's accused of killing seven people and injuring dozens more in Highland Park in July 2022. Jury selection began today in Waukegan more than 2.5 years after that deadly 4th of July parade. Our Matt Masterson joins us now with more. Matt, remind us of the charges that Cremo is facing.
So a few days after he was after the shooting, he was indicted on 117 counts. It was 21 counts of first-degree murder, which is three for each of the seven victims who was killed in the shooting, along with 48 counts of attempted murder and 48 counts of aggravated battery, one each for all the other victims who were wounded in the shooting. But today, prosecutors moved to drop 48 of those aggravated battery charges. It won't have much of an impact on the trial itself. He still faces the top count, which is murder. He still faces a mandatory life sentence if he's convicted on that. So it's more of a routine move to drop off some of the lesser charges as he gets to this point, but that's what he's facing at this point.
And as mentioned, jury selection has started. What more can you tell us about the trial process so far?
Yeah, so jury selection is expected to take most of this week. It's obviously difficult to find 12 jurors, six alternates in a case like this that's so high profile that affected so many people with, you know, over 50 people who were shot during this this mass attack. Opening statements are expected for next Monday, and the trial itself is expected to last about a month, 3 to 5 weeks, and a lot of that time is going to be taken up by those victims who are going to be testifying, possibly dozens of them, recounting their experiences of that, the day of that attack and afterwards.
And the trial, it's been delayed several times, Matt. What was going on?
So the sides initially sought a date around this point for a trial when it first got brought up. But in late 2023, Cremo abruptly dismissed his public defenders. He wanted to act as his own attorney, and he demanded a speedy trial. That bumped the trial date up to February 2024. But just a few weeks later, he backtracked on that. He rehired his public defenders, and the trial date was reset for February 2025. It also appeared for a point that there might be no trial, that a trial might be averted last summer when he appeared set to accept a plea deal in which he'd plead guilty to the murder charges and some other counts and accept a life in prison sentence. But on the day he was in court to accept that deal, he abruptly rejected it, and a bit of a surprise move in front of a lot of the victims there. So setting the stage now for the trial that he's going through at this point.
And here we are, of course. Cremo's father, how has he been involved in all this?
Yeah, his father, also named Robert Cremo, he was charged with reckless conduct for recklessly aiding his son in buying weapons a couple years before the shooting. But he had already known that his son had expressed a desire to harm people. And despite that, he signed off on his FOID card application, and that's what led to these charges. He was set for trial in late 2023 as well. On the day that was set to happen, he pleaded guilty to some reduced charges and was sentenced to 60 days in prison, which he has since served. He's been in court with his son for most of his court appearances, but it marks one of the very few occasions in U.S. history where the parent of somebody who carried out a mass shooting was held accountable for their child's actions.
Okay, and of course, as we know, we think arguments or openings will begin next week. Matt Masterson, we know you'll be all over it for us when the time comes. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Matt's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news. Costs of everyday essentials like groceries and gas are climbing while wages are remaining largely stagnant. And that's being especially felt in Chicago, which has the highest inflation rate in the nation, according to a WalletHub report. Chicago's rate sits at 4.3%, outpacing the national average of 3%. It comes as the Trump administration is promising to impose sweeping tariffs and push out much of the immigrant workforce. Joining us with more on the local economic landscape is Austin Goolsbee, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to Chicago.
Thank
tonight.
You for having me.
So as we mentioned, you know, Chicago's leading the nation in inflation, followed by San Diego, Boston, Honolulu, and San Bernardino, California. What would you say? What do we know about what is driving high inflation locally?
Well, look, this is a category you never wanted to even be in the running, and to be number one is disappointing. The thing to remember is this isn't a comparison of cost. How expensive is this city versus another city? This was the inflation rate for the year. And for actual physical goods, they can be shipped from place to place. So the cross-city inflation rate largely reflects housing price inflation and transportation costs, airfares, and that sort of thing. And while ours was the highest for this past year, that followed some previous years, where, as you know, our house price inflation was not as high as some of the other cities.
So that does not mean that we're paying more for eggs and bread and milk than our neighbors in San Diego.
Yes, true. The cost of living is higher in California, in New York City, in a whole bunch of places. Chicago's for a big city, relatively modest cost. But the inflation rate was the highest of all the major metro areas. And like I say, you never wanted to win that distinction.
Here we are. You know, obviously many consumers, we're already noticing that, you know, that it's costing us more in the checkout line at the grocery store. And I think a lot of consumers want to know, when's it going to get better? What's it going to take to see lower prices?
So the thing is, the Federal Reserve has two jobs given to it by law in the Federal Reserve Act to stabilize prices and maximize employment. And on prices, we've interpreted that to be get the inflation rate to 2%. That is the how fast the prices grow year over year, we get to 2%. That's different than the question my mom would ask, which is, when are the prices going to go back to what they were in 2019? Or if you back up farther, my grandfather would never take us to the movies because in his mind, the movies were supposed to cost a nickel. That's how much the movies cost when he was a kid.
And we all know that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. So the thing about the Fed, we have an inflation target, not a price level target, which is just a different way to say, if you want the prices to go back to what they were in 2019, you would have to have very substantial deflation. And the only way that we know how to do that is if wages went way down, and nobody wants wages to go down. So in our world, in the central bank world, we're just trying to get the inflation rate to 2%, and we would like incomes to be growing faster than prices. And lately that has been happening. This number for Chicago is a little troubling because to have an inflation rate of 4.3% is right around or even above what average wages have been growing. So that's an area of concern.
So you can have inflation slow down, but our prices will maybe remain the same.
Yeah.
Can that happen?
Yeah, the prices, if we got inflation to 2%, the central bank is going to say, that was our goal. People are still going to see that the prices are going up 2% from where they were the previous year. The key question is, are incomes, is your real income, that is your standard of living, rising? And we went through a period where I don't need to tell you or anybody else, that wasn't happening. The job market was strong, but wages were going up less than prices. And that was the centerpiece of people's anger about inflation.
So we also know President Trump, he plans to impose 25% tariffs on goods from Canada and Mexico, which experts warn, or economic experts are warning, that's going to be, of course, another hit to consumers' pockets. You're probably limited in what you can say here, but what is your reaction to the administration's proposals?
Look, as you say, the Feds, we're in the monetary policy business of setting interest rates, so we don't say what's a good fiscal policy, tax policy, tariff policy. Congress and the president can do whatever they want to do. But I always say it's our Midwest motto, there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothing. We look at the conditions and decide on what jacket to wear. So if the administration enacts policies that drive up prices, by law, the Fed has to think about anything that raises prices or affects employment. That's in our mandate. If they carry out tariffs of the form on intermediate goods, that is, on things in the supply chain, steel, aluminum, things that are used in the making of other products, that will have an impact on prices outside of just those specific goods themselves. And the thing to note in Chicago, the state of Illinois, and really the whole Midwest, we're significantly more manufacturing intensive than the rest of the national economy. So tariffs will affect Illinois much more than the average economy. I think of the 50 states, we're about sixth or seventh in impact of the tariffs, depending how big they are or on what countries they apply to.
And as president of the Federal Reserve in Chicago in this region, is that a concern?
It's a concern. Yeah. And it's not that it's coming straight from me. I was just a few days ago out at the Automotive Insight Symposium that the Chicago Fed runs in Detroit, and talked to a lot of major auto executives. The auto industry, as you might imagine, it's the mother of all supply chains. One car can have up to 30,000 different parts in it. Every one of them has its own supply chain. And we talked to major suppliers who expressed their concerns about if tariffs came in, how big would they be, and how rapidly would they be passed through onto consumers. And a lot of people saying they thought it could go straight onto consumers. Others saying they thought for the suppliers that the auto manufacturers would not give them higher prices, so they might have to eat it. So there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of kind of dust in the air. And before the Fed can go back to cutting the rates, I feel and have expressed that we got to get a little dust out of the air to have some more clarity.
Understood. And before we move on, let's make sure that our viewers understand and have a sense of, you know, what it is the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago does and how your work influences the region's economy.
Yeah, fair.
And you touched on a bit of it.
Look, fair. There are the Federal Reserve Act set up a system with some D.C. members of the Fed who are political appointees and confirmed by the Senate. Jay Powell is the chair. But in 1913, when they passed the Federal Reserve Act, as today, fundamentally, people did not want Washington, D.C. and New York City to control the whole financial system. So there are 12 reserve banks spread around the United States, one of which is in Chicago and kind of covers heart of the Midwest. And that, the Chicago Federal Reserve Bank, is a bank to the region's banks. So we do a bunch of the plumbing of the financial system. We are the supervisors of banks. We run hundreds of millions of dollars of cash in and out of the bank. We have a big vault with money in it. And we run payments, ACH, direct deposit, Fedwire, a whole bunch of financial services, as well as going to Washington and voting on monetary policy.
And people still are using cash, right?
People are still using cash, a lot of it.
It's not all on debit and credit and whatever else you might use. So healthcare, obviously a major industry in the Chicago area. And since the president took office in January, we've seen massive federal cuts to sciences, research. Are there concerns about sort of this, what could be a potential purging of the region's major employers and what that could do to the economic outlook?
I mean, anything that affects employment, we have to think about. The law tells us we have to think about it. It's still to be determined collectively what does the entire policy package entail if there are to be spending cuts and government tax cuts and tariffs and immigration policy and geopolitics, the war in Ukraine, the Middle East, what happens to commodity prices, all of those taken together are just the background conditions. And I guess the way I'd say it is the conditions are changing all the time. Yes, it feels like there are a lot of uncertainties about policy right now, but the FOMC meets every 6 weeks to determine interest rates. It meets that frequently precisely because we know the conditions are constantly changing, and so we just take it as it comes and try to adjust the policy for that.
We had State Representative John Cabello joining us here last week to discuss DOGE and establishing a local version of it here in Illinois. He argues the government is not meant to be a job creator. Here he is.
Government is supposed to create an environment for private business to flourish. The more government agencies that we have, there's going to be more burden on the taxpayers. So what we need to do is we need to create an environment for private business to flourish and get away from government jobs so that way the taxpayers aren't burdened as much. When you have private industry doing this, the taxpayers are going to win.
Your reaction to that assessment?
Well, look, this is straight down the line fiscal policy decision that Congress, the president, everyone can sort out what their view is on that. I totally agree that if you just look at the data, 90%+ of growth in this country has nothing to do with Washington or state government. It comes from the private sector. Our goal at the Fed, we got to fight inflation and we got to maximize employment. We succeeded very well on the job market side. That's been the strongest thing in the economy. And partly before I got there, but partly since I've been there, where we have failed is on getting inflation down. That's clearly been the worst part of the economy, has been the cost of living and the inflation affordability crisis. So if Washington and or the state will sort out what their policies are, it will be a lot easier for us to then determine what is the appropriate response on interest rates. But in this period where they're hammering that out, we got to take a little bit of a wait and see posture. We run the scenarios. I mean, if you ask me what keeps you up at night, the job of central bank is not to sleep at night. We nap in the daytime, you know. So hopefully nothing they will contemplate will be something that we haven't thought of. But we're still just in this running scenarios. We're fighting inflation and maximizing employment. That's all we do.
And waiting and see. Good luck. You obviously got your work cut out for you. Austin Goolsbee, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, marking another grim anniversary. But first, a look at the weather. Today marks 3 years since Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, resulting in thousands of people being killed and millions displaced. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, says he would consider giving up his presidency in exchange for peace. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump met with French President Emmanuel Macron today as part of efforts by European leaders to persuade Trump not to abandon Ukraine while he negotiates a peace agreement with Russia. Our Joanna Hernandez heard from local Ukrainians speaking out against the war.
I got to grow up with the best of both worlds. I got to grow up with fully Ukrainian-speaking parents. I never once forgot my language. I've always got to keep it up because there, like you said, there are so many Ukrainians in the area here.
Zoriana Shmozanik left Ukraine with her family at age 10 and found a new home in Chicago. Now she has dedicated the last 3 years to speaking out about the ongoing war.
So we've gotten very used to the fact that death is just staring us in the face, and I think the world has gotten used to it too.
Shmozanik is a co-founder of the Ukrainian Doubters Foundation, an organization raising money to send aid to Ukrainian soldiers fighting on the front lines.
Unfortunately, medical supplies and aid to try to get as many people that have been injured to save their lives, and this isn't just military personnel because there's a lot of civilians at the front lines.
Since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, millions of Ukrainians have been forced to flee their homes, and thousands of civilians have been killed. Shmozanik says there's still hundreds of Ukrainians who have stayed behind to fight like her brother.
Oh, and these are the kits that the foundation puts together to send over to Ukraine.
Yes, yes, many, many, many. I've lost count of how many. Part of first aid kits issued to soldiers, entry exit wound sealant for chest wounds and all this stuff.
As we walk through Ukrainian village, home to one of the largest populations of Ukrainians in the U.S., we stop by a local restaurant and meet a group of American Ukrainian veterans.
They're saying things now like Ukraine started the war. Well, that's kind of nonsensical because it was. You saw it on TV. You saw that whole invasion on TV. So what our Ukrainian-American veterans posted, we put together a humanitarian fund.
John Stashiv is a Ukrainian-American veteran and a refugee from Germany during World War II. For the past 5 years, his Post 32 has raised funds to support a military clinical rehab hospital in Lviv, assisting wounded soldiers and individuals with long-term disabilities.
Completely devastated. It's, you look at it, some of the towns and whatnot we visited when we were there that first time, because they took us on a tour of all the different places in Ukraine. And I said, wow, I remember that, and there's nothing there.
It's demolished.
Yeah.
Although the war is 5,000 miles away, many, like Shmozanik, say it remains a conflict that is part of her everyday life.
This is a Russian missile that had landed in Ukraine in, I believe, Kharkiv a little over a year ago. And if you guys were here, you'd be able to touch and feel how sharp these edges actually are. And this is a rather large chunk of, I guess you could call it shrapnel, that splinters all over the block, destroys lives.
The message remains resolute among the thousands living in Ukrainian village. They want the war to stop, but not on Russia's terms.
Putin is wanted by the International Criminal Court for kidnapping Ukrainian children and many, many other cases. I mean, the world is not a safe place. Ukraine is the thing that is stopping Russian terrorism from reaching the rest of Europe, from reaching further into America.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
The Ukrainian Daughters Foundation says it sent over 300 first aid kits to soldiers on the front lines. To learn more about the organization, please visit our website. And that's our show for this Monday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. One-on-one with Chicago's CFO on Mayor Johnson's plan to borrow $830 million to fund infrastructure projects. And we leave you tonight with more of the late Roberta Flack performing on soundstage in 1981. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Walking in the dark, seeing numbers do their thing. Ooh, that's the time. I feel like making love to you.
I feel like making love to you.
That's the time. Touching me and my feelings start to show. Ooh, 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 that's the time I feel like making love to you.
Like
sugar, sugar, that's the time.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.
Holding hands.